Hi, everybody. Welcome to Two Off the First for today, December the 5th, 2022. I'm Ryan Ballingy. Good to have you here with us. We are presented by our friends at French Lick Resort in French Lick, Indiana. We have two topics, as the name of the show implies. Hope you had a great weekend, the fun weekend of golf. We have the Australian Open wrapping up in Melbourne. You have Victoria Golf Club hosting Kingston Heath, which is somehow playing second fiddle, an incredible golf course in its own right, the other host course this week for what turned out to be a really awesome festival of golf. You had the Australian Open, the Women's Australian Open, and an All Abilities Championship all at the same time, all unfolding. Yes, there were some issues with it, but really cool end results. Adrian Meronk wound up winning in a little bit of a misleading runaway. Adam Scott was right there until the very final four or five holes and then kind of gave way to Meronk, who wound up winning. And then you had Ashley Buhai, who had a career season this year on the LPGA, wrapping up a tremendous year for herself. She won the AIG Women's Open. Then she won the Women's Australian Open. Very cool for her. They had equal prize money. That was cool for those two tournaments. And then the number one adaptive player in the world wound up winning the All Abilities Championship, which, hey, that's great, great news for the adaptive game as well. So big wins there. Then on the Hero World Challenge, we had Victor Hovland, Tropical Vic, busted out the win. Made it very interesting on the 72nd hole. Becomes the second guy other than LT Gray to successfully defend the title in the World Challenge ever. And that's going back, 20-some-odd years. This tournament has quite a history at this point. So that's a big deal for Victor Hovland. Ends the year on a somewhat happy note. And said that, this year has kind of been different for him because of the way that he's played and got so close to the Open but didn't get there. And so we, was leaving a kind of awkward, sour taste in his mouth. Turns out to be kind of sweet in the end with $1 million coming his way. And then Thurston Lawrence got the job done for his third DP World Tour victory, won his national championship, the Investec South African Open Championship. He had a back 941, which tells you how big of a lead he had going into the final nine holes, wound up winning by a shot over Clement Sorde. So, pretty interesting weekend of golf. None of those things are the two topics we're going to talk about, just kind of a recap of things that happened in the weekend of golf, in case you didn't pay any attention to any of that, and I cannot blame you. Had the World Cup. We had NFL football, we had championship games in major college football conferences, had some great college basketball. Shout out to my Terps for beating the Illini, and new head coach Kevin Willard turning out to be a great hire, at least so far. So kudos to them so far on an early good season. But we have two topics to talk about, and one is Cam Smith related, but not necessarily LIV related. And then the other is in fact LIV related, but not entirely LIV related. So a little bit of a teaser there. But let's start with Cam Smith. So Cam Smith was riding high after last Sunday. He was the winner of the Australian PGA Championship. Fortinet Australian PGA Championship. Had a great week. Was celebrated. Went off, I think, as a 2.5, plus 250 favorite, plus 260 favorite, somewhere in that range. Wound up winning the golf tournament. Obviously a big deal for him. He's won the tournament now three times in a tournament that dates back to the late 20s. So he's putting his thumbprint on a historical tournament. Then comes in to the Australian Open. Equally favored, of course. The highest ranked player in the field by far, not even close. And he was expected to do big things at Victoria Golf Club and at Kingston Heath. He had a round on each of the golf courses. Whether you were in the Australian Open or Women's Australian Open or the All Abilities Championship. And you had a cut after the first two rounds, and then you had a cut after the third round. So Cam Smith didn't play that great, got out of the gate pretty poorly, to be honest with you. And that's, hey, that happens. I mean, that happens to anyone after you win a golf tournament. But on Friday night, he thought he had missed the cut at the Australian Open, and was sitting, I think, on plus two or plus three, something like that, and two over through 36 holes, and he was teetering on the cut line, wasn't sure if he was going to make it, so apparently he wound up going out to a place called Moonee Valley Racing Club in Melbourne, was riding horses, something you do apparently, some people do. Not a horse guy, but hey, I'll bet on him, but not ride them. But anyway, he thought he missed the cut at the Australian Open at that two-over tally, and then decided, okay, well, I've got the weekend off. I'm going to go out and have some fun, go throw back some Friday beers with some buddies, And then it turns out he made the cut. And so things kind of had to change pretty quickly on Friday night because he was staying out late, which meant because he was one of the last guys to make the cut, he was one of the first to go out on Saturday at Victoria, along with the last or the worst ranked players to make the cut in the Women's Open and the start of the Adaptive Tournament, which is 12 players, but, you know, still, that's extra bodies on the golf course. And for Saturday, you had something like 150 players on one golf course. So you had to start really early to get this thing going. And keep in mind, it's summer in Australia, so they could start even earlier. So anyway, wound up realizing that he had made the cut and then he would have a tee time in a few hours. And that didn't turn out so well. He said, quote, "I wasn't really expecting it. I was pretty quick to the pub and I was probably a few too many beers deep and then realized we had an early tee time. So I got back on the waters and was a good boy for the rest of the night," end quote. But unfortunately, maybe a little bit hungover, probably pretty tired from going out and also winning a tournament the week prior. He still shot one under 69 in the third round of Victoria, but that was not good enough to get to the final cut because they had a cut, a secondary cut in this tournament to the top 30 in ties for the final round because they wanted to keep the golf course at least somewhat tight for Sunday. And they had a similar cut for the Women's Open. The Australian Open had 156 players down to, I think, top 60, and then down to top 30 through three rounds, and they had 108 players in the Women's Open. They cut that down similarly, and then they wound up getting it down to something like 31 players for the final round. Unfortunately for Smith, missed by two shots, and he wasn't alone. I mean, there were a bunch of good players in the field who wound up not making that 54-hole cut, but I thought that was pretty funny. But then, anyway, after all, Sunday is freed up because he missed the 54-hole cut. So people asked him, journalists at the tournament asked him if he was going straight back to the pub, go have some Saturday beers instead of Friday beers. And Smith said, "I thought I had it in me today, being Saturday, and hit a lot of good shots and just couldn't really capitalize. Just not my week," end quote. So now Cam Smith's done for the year. You had the two big tournaments in Australia. Used to be three. There used to be an Aussie Masters that he might have played in had that still existed, but doesn't anymore. So here we are. His year is over, and now we probably won't see Cam Smith play golf again until, I'm guessing, February, which is kind of interesting because we don't know entirely what the 2023 LIV schedule is going to look like, but we know now that it's going to start off at Mayakoba, the former PGA Tour venue, now will be a LIV venue. So we are not going to see him until pretty much the Super Bowl, after the Super Bowl at this point. That's very strange, I think. And we used to be accustomed to seeing Cam Smith playing earlier in the year, and obviously did great things at the start of this year, playing in the Tournament of Champions. That'll no longer be the case. And that's going to be something we have to think about for a bunch of LIV players. Some of them are playing this week in the Alfred Dunhill Championship, which is in South Africa. You've got Lou Oosthuizen, Charles Schwartzel, and Brandon Grace. I'm pretty sure Henny Duplessis is in there. So four LIV guys who are playing this week because they're probably getting a nice little kickback to play, and they know they've been involved with this tournament in the past as well. So, you know, all kind of works out in their favor a little bit. But we're not going to see them again after this week until February either. So they have a bit of a lull, and I'm very curious how that will work out in the coming weeks and months for the folks who live. But back to Cam Smith. Hey, I would have made the same mistake, and the same mistakes have been made before by other players in different ways. Bryson DeChambeau flew home thinking he had missed the cut and then had to fly back. That didn't go very well. Other players have done similar things, like left town or walked off a golf course thinking about, you know, maybe they weren't going to be in a playoff, and then they wind up in a playoff and they have to rush back, and that doesn't go well. It always pays to pay attention to the leaderboard, always pays to know where you are in the tournament, and maybe not relenting entirely, giving up for the week until, you know, you're officially cut. But Cam Smith's had a great little run in Australia, wins the Aussie PGA. It's fine. He's had a great year, and he wins one in his home nation. I think that's pretty good for him. All right, second story of the day is a second part of, I think it's going to be a three-part interview with Paul Kimmage, who is an Irish Independent columnist, has forged this great relationship with Rory McIlroy over the years. And I think more or less each year they have a long, winding conversation recapping McElroy's year, big events in his life, his opinion on a variety of things. And the first part came out, I think it was last week. The second part just came out over the weekend. And it's a really interesting read. Again, you have to pay for it. It's worth the read, I think. If you're interested in this kind of thing, I'm sure you can find somewhere in the internet a website that will help you jump the paywall if you wish, but I will not point you to that, obviously. Kind of want to help fellow journalists out here. However, the folks at Golf Digest did do a bit of a service for us and went through the interview. They have a subscription, I guess, and started detailing some of the finer points of the second part. And in the second part, McElroy gets into kind of where he started getting on the wrong side of things and why he started getting into a feud with Greg Norman, who is now the LIV Golf CEO. And obviously, they have had quite a war of words, quite a public feud this year in particular, but it goes back a little bit longer than that. And McElroy explains why and said that the whole thing started actually in 2020 when McElroy was talking about the idea of the Premier Golf League, back when it was supposed to be a venture capital funded thing that didn't have a foreign government's sovereign wealth fund involved. And McElroy was still teetering on the concept then, and he said, similar to Arnold Palmer in the days of Greg Norman offering the concept of the World Tour in the early 90s, that McElroy said he wanted to be on the right side of history, and that seemed to needle Greg Norman and really tick him off. And McElroy says, quote, "Norman wasn't happy, and we had a pretty testy back and forth, and he was very condescending. Maybe one day you'll understand and all this stuff." Different word. McElroy said, but that then it kind of cooled off, or so McElroy thought, because earlier this year he was watching the ESPN 30 for 30 documentary, or 30 for 30 plus documentary, whatever it was, on Norman's collapse in the final round of the 96 Masters. And McElroy reached out to Norman, and apparently they had some kind of positive exchange. And McElroy thought, hey, you know, everything's kind of done and dusted, and that's okay, and we'll move on. And things were different also in April. It seemed like perhaps there would be something defeated, you know, that LIV Golf as we now know it might have been defeated by the PGA Tour at that point, but it was still going on, still recruiting players, still developing those relationships. And to McElroy's surprise, several weeks later, Norman said publicly that McElroy had been, quote, brainwashed by the PGA Tour, which that didn't sit very well with McElroy, who said, quote, I'm like, for F's sake, we've had this really nice back and forth, and he says that about me. I thought, you know what? I'm going to make it my business now to be as much of a pain in his ass as possible. And that's basically what I've done since, end quote. And I say this all the time, and I'm going to be a dad for a second. I say this all the time to my kids. You never know who you're talking to. You never know, one, what they're dealing with, but you never know who they are. And you never know what relationship you can start or break with them, depending on how you treat them. And obviously, McElroy and Norman are two very large figures in the game of golf. They were before LIV. They probably will be after LIV, whatever that looks like, whether it's normalized or goes away. But after this rift of this year, they'll still be big figures in the game. And obviously, they have egos, and obviously, they have history. But I feel like for both of them to just kind of hinge at least their relationship in part on, I guess, Norman taking issue with McElroy in the first place, but allowing to have an opinion, but then being condescending to him, which, from what I understand, is something Norman does. And then for McElroy to kind of come back and try to be this peacemaker type guy, the guy that he kind of seems to be publicly and apparently maybe privately, and tried to make peace. And then all of a sudden, Norman still goes on his thing about it. And then to take it personally, and then try to kind of needle him at every opportunity, knowing full well that his calls for, you know, Greg's got to go and he can't be the CEO, and that's one of the preconditions of discussing some kind of agreement with LIV between the golf ecosystem as it exists now and what they're offering, or what they could offer, I suppose. For that to be somewhat predicated on a personal gripe between the two, that tells you kind of how history works out. It kind of tells you that, hey, some of this stuff kind of happens because people just don't treat each other the right way, or they get rubbed the wrong way at some point, and then vendettas are created, and then revenge happens, and then all this other stuff happens. A series of events happen because two people didn't get along, or someone said something the other person didn't like. And maybe, and I don't know this to be true, of course, but maybe things would have been a little bit different had none of this stuff ever happened previously. It's one of those kind of what if history books. I have some of my bookshelf here, which is why I'm looking at it as I'm recording this. But reading those books, and you think, well, what, if that didn't happen, what would happen here, or would any of this have happened? Well, this may be one of those situations where if Greg Norman had never ticked off Rory McIlroy, would any of this had happened? Will Greg Norman be forced out because that's a precondition for being able to kind of normalize live? I don't know, but Norman has said he's the guy. The head of the Saudi Public Investment Fund has said he's the guy. Norman's the guy. He's staying. And then he reports that Mark King or someone else is coming in to be the CEO and push Norman either the chairman's role or out entirely, or are not true. So there's also that wrinkle added in that there's this whole lawsuit between LIV and the PGA Tour and a couple LIV players. And as part of that discovery process between the PGA Tour and LIV for documents, the PGA Tour is now asking the Public Investment Fund to provide documents because from what they have gathered so far, the documentation seems to tell them that Greg Norman is effectively a figurehead, that he doesn't really have a whole lot of power in the day-to-day operations of LIV, and that makes a lot of sense, to be honest. I mean, it's not Greg Norman's money, and all the money belongs to the Saudis. So yeah, Norman could have things to do, decisions around some operations or allowing shorts or range finders or maybe trying to recruit venues or recruit players or come up with kind of contract numbers. But at the end of the day, the Saudis run the company through the public investment fund, through their ownership of the company that's it's an LLC that owns LIV Golf LLC. That it's a very convoluted system so that the public investment fund can say, hey, we don't control it. And that's what they're claiming in court filings, so they don't have to get deposed and they don't have to provide documentation and discovery. It's a really interesting legal fight, but that's going to be settled over many months, probably. All that to say, I think all of this kind of comes down to, in the current state of the LIV feud, is that the players on the PGA Tour side and the PGA Tour think Greg Norman isn't relevant to this at all. So they want him to have to go to be able to deal with the people who are, I guess, are really in charge, which the people with the money, which makes sense. And then force Greg Norman to have some pain and some embarrassment. And again, comes back to a simple incident. And McIlroy talked about it a little bit later in the interview with Kimmage and says, quote, "So as much as I'm anti-Liv, I feel the PGA Tour have got lucky that Greg Norman has fronted this up. I think that they found someone less polarizing. Liv could have made more inroads," end quote. And so another shot at Norman of, hey, and there are a lot of people who don't like Norman in golf. I mean, that exists, and that's however you want to choose to deal with that. But I think McIlroy does have a point here in to say that if they had installed a CEO with golf experience or golf relationships that was maybe closer to universally liked and maybe not perceived as someone with a 30-year grudge against the thing he's trying to disrupt, then perhaps LIV would have been tremendously more successful in its first year. Maybe they would have signed away a lot more players and had those players less concerned about the source of the money or the damage to the reputation or anything that people worry about LIV are worried about before signing with LIV or choosing not to sign with them at all. And I think McIlroy probably has a point about that. And we've talked about that previously, I believe, on this show. But I also think Norman is kind of relevant to all of this because without him, I don't know that necessarily any of this gets off the ground. So you LIV kind of needed Norman to be one, the provocateur and public face, but they also needed him to kind of help them sort of navigate golf, even though he hasn't necessarily been the best at that with world ranking points and television deals. And he probably doesn't have a whole lot of hand in the television deal, to be honest with you, and negotiating players and those types of things, strategic alliances. The golf stuff is probably Norman's portfolio. The big stuff, TV, investors, Saudi money budget, that's probably all somebody else's. So they needed him, but maybe they didn't need him. And I think in 5 or 6 years, wherever we are with all of this, there will be some kind of look back on what all of these decisions, again, could have meant if they were slightly different, or if some people got along, or things like that. Or there's just so much to consider, and I think it's really interesting. All because of one comment McElroy made, one slight that was perceived from Norman back, and that's it. That's kind of how things go sometimes, especially among people with big egos. All right, that's going to do it for us today on Two Out the First. Thank you so much for checking us out. I appreciate it. You can find us on your favorite podcasting service. Please give us a subscription if you feel like you want to listen to the best stories in golf each day. We're also available on Golf News Net Radio through TuneIn and our website, golfnewsnet.com. We appreciate it. If you're watching us on video, we'd love if you smash that like button and smash the subscribe button. We are building some momentum as well on video, and very much appreciate that too. We will talk to you tomorrow. Thanks so much. Have a great one.